All right, hi everyone. I'm a PhD candidate from the School of Environmental Sciences at the University of Guelph, and today I'm going to be presenting to you some results from a two-year field trial looking at soil denitrifier community responses to residue management in biomass cropping systems. So just to give you a little bit of background, bioenergy produced from plant biomass is largely carbon neutral and renewable compared to that from fossil fuels. And plant biomass has many different downstream uses, including production of bioethanol, as well as electricity generation via combustion. So biomass needs have continued to increase as different governments have invested in renewable energy. And in Ontario specifically, the provincial government has committed to a coal phase-out by the end of this year in 2014 in all provincial-wide electricity generating stations. So there's an increased need for plant biomass specifically in Ontario. And pictured here is the Atikokan Generating Station, which is currently the largest 100% biomass-fueled capacity generating station in North America. So as these needs for biomass have increased, different crops have been proposed for large-scale biomass production, including C4 perennial grasses. They've been kind of touted as an ideal biomass crop for large-scale production for many different reasons, mainly though because they have very large biomass yields. So pictured here is our field trial with one of our summer students who's about 6 feet tall, just for relative comparison. So as biomass crop production strategies have increased, a lot of research focus lately has been on assessing different aspects of sustainability of these systems, particularly associated greenhouse gas emissions. Nitrous oxide in particular is of significant concern within the agricultural sector, as nitrous oxide emissions lead to direct economic losses for producers. And nitrous oxide emissions have also been estimated to contribute about 50% of life cycle analysis greenhouse gases within a lot of these systems. However, measuring nitrous oxide emissions within small-scale experimental plot biomass cropping systems can be really difficult. So instead, we can use molecular methods to target the microbial communities that are the major producers and consumers of nitrous oxide. So I'm primarily interested in denitrifying bacteria, and denitrification is a reaction that occurs primarily under oxygen-limited conditions when heterotrophic bacteria use nitrogen oxides as alternate electron acceptors for energy production. So pictured here is the pathway. And basically, the whole reaction is catalyzed by a suite of microbial reductases, which are shown in boxes. And by targeting different gene copies of the genes that code for these enzymes, we can assess the potential of a soil to produce or consume nitrous oxide in relative terms. So I'm going to be talking about two projects today. The first one was a longer-term project in order to assess the effects of biomass cropping systems on both total and denitrifying communities, microbial communities, and to relate these changes to biomass yields in Ontario soil. So we hypothesized that our gene copies would differ based on season and over time. We thought that spring-harvested perennial grasses would have higher total denitrifying community abundances based on the fact that increased nitrogen would be translocated from shoots into roots and rhizomes over the winter season, and that nitrogen application would increase denitrifying gene copies. So the site where I worked was established in 2008 in a randomized complete design in a split-split plot three-way factorial of three replicates. I sampled soil for molecular analysis in May and October of 2011 and 2012. And just because we're in the States, I thought I'd show you where we are located. So I'm at the University of Guelph, and our research station is the Allora Research Station, which is just west of Toronto and northwest of Guelph. And pictured here, you can see the actual location of my field trials shown on Google Earth, which I thought was cool. Okay, so we sampled soil under two different perennial grass species, Miscanthus nigera and switchgrass shelter, as well as a soy corn rotation, and we sampled soil under both unfertilized and fertilized conditions. Additionally, within the perennial grasses, we wanted to assess the effects of different harvest management on these microbial communities. So Miscanthus and switchgrass can both be harvested in the fall post-frost kill. Miscanthus can also be left standing, a standing biomass, over winter until spring harvest. And this is often done to increase the combustion qualities of the biomass. Switchgrass is not recommended to leave until harvest, until spring, as large reductions in yields can occur. So depending on producers' limitations in collecting and storing the biomass over winter, it's often cut in the fall and then assembled into windrows until removal in the spring. So just to give you an idea of this, this is what my fields look like after harvest. So you can see that there's a ton of residues left in the field. And then pictured here on the left is a switchgrass windrow after the winter season, and then the standing miscanthus biomass after the winter season. Okay, so we measured a whole bunch of different soil variables. We also collected climatic data from the LoRa Research Station. And then my focus was the molecular analysis. So we extracted DNA from soil, and we used quantitative PCR to enumerate both nitrifying and total gene targets. So getting into some results, this is our climatic kind of variables from the site. Pictured in the top and bottom panels, respectively, are soil and air temperature, shown by the gray line. The bottom panel also shows daily cumulative precipitation in the black bars. And the symbols in the top panel are our plot-specific gravimetric soil moisture contents. So we found that, in general, 2011 was a lot wetter than 2012. And in 2012, we had really a warm spring, which resulted in early crop emergence. We additionally found no significant differences in any of our soil variables between the perennial or annual crops. However, organic carbon was slightly elevated in the perennial grasses. So looking at yields, we found that miscanthus had the highest harvested biomass yields out of all of the crops we looked at, and that these yields did not significantly change with respect to nitrogen fertilization or harvest timing. When switchgrass was harvested in the fall and also fertilized, it also had similarly high yields. So looking at some of our molecular results, picture here is log 16S gene copies per gram dry soil, which is a proxy for the total microbial community abundance. And we found that 16S abundance fluctuated seasonally, with higher abundances seen in October versus May, which we hypothesized was due to an increase in the availability and diversity of resources in the soil for microbial growth and metabolism through the growing season. Again, looking at nitrifying responses over time, so in the top three panels is pictured NER-S, and bottom three panels are pictured NOS gene copies. And we found a few different things. So as kind of expected, these gene copies increased with increases in soil moisture. We did not see any effects of nitrogen fertilization. And we interestingly found that these communities responded independently of the total microbial community. So we didn't have any statistical significant interactions between time or different management factors. We were allowed able to look at the effects of harvest management over both years. And what we found was that the spring harvested miscanthus supported larger total and NER-S nitrifying communities than fall harvested crops. And regardless of harvest management within miscanthus, miscanthus always supported larger NOS communities. So as I showed you before, that picture with all the residues, when we were first out in the field the first time around, we realized how much residues was left in the field, and we thought that this might create hot spots of denitrification. So we also wanted to assess how this residue return might also affect short-term denitrifier abundance and potential activity. So we set up subplots of either 100% plant biomass return or 100% removal or undisturbed plots within our perennial grasses. And we did a similar analysis. However, we co-extracted DNA and RNA and reverse transcribed RNA to cDNA, and then used quantitative PCR to both assess the abundance through DNA or the potential activity through our cDNA transcripts of denitrifiers and total communities. So just looking at short-term changes over the growing season, we found that there was a significant increase in many of the denitrifying gene transcript copies from May until June due to a significant rain event that occurred in between there, although total microbial activity did decrease. We also found that despite our longer-term studies showing no effects of nitrogen fertilization on the abundance of these denitrifying communities, that over the short term, fertilized plots had higher denitrifier activity. And then finally, looking at the effects of residue addition and removal, we found that regardless of crop species or time or nitrogen fertilization rate, that residue retention increased the potential NOS activity through cDNA transcript enumeration. So as a takeaway, finally, Miscanthus appears to be a good candidate for large-scale biomass production in Ontario because it is high-yielding and does not require nitrogen fertilization. Yields are unaffected by harvest timing, so there's both applications for fall-harvested Miscanthus being used for bioethanol production or spring-harvested Miscanthus using for combustion downstream processes. And most importantly to us, our results seem to indicate that Miscanthus might potentially have lower soil nitrous oxide emissions than annual crops based on increased nitrous oxide reducing bacteria abundance and activity over the short term. Switchgrass may also be a good candidate, however, nitrogen fertilization may be required. We also concluded that management in biomass-based bioenergy systems should be developed to incorporate the possibility of nitrous oxide emission hotspots after both biomass harvest or nitrogen fertilization in order to mitigate emissions. And finally, although this has let us have some really great results, all of this needs to be validated by in-field representative nitrous oxide flux measurements. So I'd like to thank my advisor and my advisory committee members, as well as our funding sources, OMAFRA, OGS, and OGF, for their support. Thank you.
Yeah, we have time for any questions.
Can you tell me why this Miscanthus might have a larger denitrifier community?
Well, we are thinking that because Miscanthus produced such large yields.
We're thinking that because the Miscanthus produced such large yields that there would be a lot of or a higher amount of residue return probably in the Miscanthus plots over the two-year period compared to the other crops, and this might have affected the nitrous oxide reducing communities and stimulated them.
Does your Miscanthus maintain yield over repeated harvests? How many years did you harvest?
Well, we only have harvest data ourselves in the study for 2 years, but it was established in 2008, so we have seen increases in yields from year one to year three, and then between year two to four in our study, there wasn't an increase between years. However, earlier on too, in the first couple of years before I started my project, both Miscanthus and switchgrass also showed a positive response in yield to nitrogen fertilization.
One more question.
Well, the perennial grasses obviously have a lot larger below-ground biomass, which would, I think, increase the amount of carbon and nitrogen going into the system. And because, especially within the spring-harvested Miscanthus, that kind of increased time to allow nitrogen translocation back into the system would definitely affect the microbial communities, definitely.